Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, welcome everybody to our next edition of the Design Intent Podcast. We are in podcast lockdown, doing it via Zoom. And I think we'll have some interesting things to talk about. And we're going to begin by discussing a topic that Dan posed. And Dan, do you want to get into it and tell us?
Yeah. So the basic thing, and I've been thinking about this for a little while off and on, is, especially as we work on different projects for different people and companies, is the basic premise of the question is, has everything been invented, or has everything that's been designed, is it just a copy of something that's gone beforehand? Like, is there any new design? So that's basically the idea posed as a question.
Right. Well, I what I think is very cool about this is that I bet you we'll probably come down on both sides of the coin, which is a little bit, maybe that's weak. I don't know. But what I think is cool about it is that it may allow us for future discussions to kind of go into various design movements and various design styles and potentially even various designers that have had maybe large impacts on us personally or in our career of design or industrial design.
Right.
Because if you think about like new things and you look at, I guess you could say the work of like Charles and Ray Eames, which is really fascinating. The shapes are somewhat recognizable, I think, to us because they're sort of organic and you might find these things in nature like flowers and things that grow. Maybe it's the material they use, but what I think is really cool is that what I think is new, and at least some of the things that they did at the time, was the material that they actually had access to and how they learned about the material and the process of their development of those products. And so
Right. Looking
at like all the cool bent plywood work that they did.
They did a lot of experimentation that was really charging new ground in terms of material usage.
And I guess, you know, they were doing new things, but like I said, it's kind of, they're mimicking some organic materials and organic shapes and things. So maybe it's new in the application, but not new to the eye. If that
right.
Makes
sense. Well, and they were doing new things, but they weren't the inventors of, you know, bent or formed or molded plywood. And they certainly weren't the inventors of organic forms, right? But what they did do is an idea of, okay, let's take these things and mate them together.
Yeah. I would almost say they might be the inventors of bent or molded plywood, at least in the way that they were doing it. Because at the time, there wasn't a lot of molded plywood forms or furniture that was happening prior to the Second World War. And then during the Second World War, the way they were able to get access to the materials was they had a government contract. And so they were making like airplane seats, they were making fuselages for gliders, and they were like making arms and leg sprints. Yeah. Splints. If you've ever seen one of those are like the most awesome piece of design that you can kind of get your hands on. And they really learned their craft by working that way for the government. But they never really, I don't think prior to that, I think they were starting to get into it, but not 100%. And so they were able to really dive deep into the process and really understanding the limitations of the materials.
Well, yeah, they definitely took that ball and ran with it in terms of, trying new things and new shapes and a lot of experimentation, that's for sure.
Yeah, I guess it was like the 4-minute mile. They were like the first ones to break the 4-minute mile using that medium.
So maybe you've heard this quote before, and it's kind of, it's a somewhat famous quote, but then it's actually falsely attributed. So there was the a guy by the name of Charles Duell, I think, or Duell, and he was the commissioner of the U.S. Patent Office around the turn of the last century, so between 1898 and 1901. So he was basically in charge of the U.S. Patent Office, and he has been attributed with saying that everything that has been invented has already been invented. You know, he was saying at the time, okay, we're sort of, you know, we have the steam engine and, you know, the light bulb has already come around and all these other things. And I'm going to come back to that quote, but, you know, if we, okay, fast forward 120 years. So here we're having a discussion about design, and is there anything new? You know, is every design a recycled something from the past? And I guess what I've been thinking about is linking it back to that quote. Is it like saying that?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
I think it depends on what you interpret as new. Because like you said, you know, you can design with new materials or use different techniques to get to something. But at the end of the day, it feels like there's nothing new because everything abides by the same physical laws. So unless, like what I was saying the other day, unless we, you know, encounter someone from a different world or we figure out different laws or of physics or science or something that doesn't abide by that, it's somewhat of an interpretation of something else. Like a lot of the things, you know, biomimicry and all that, you know, it's innovative in terms of taking something from nature and using it in someplace else, but at the end of the day, we're borrowing it from something else.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, in thinking about this, and if we think, okay, let's think back further in human history as things, people have come up with new ideas of things. You know, if we think, okay, the Bronze Age, you know, people started making tools out of metal.
Right.
So would you say, okay, that was a completely new invention? Or could you say, okay, well, that's the same thing as the Eames designing a molded plywood chair? Because guaranteed the guy who invented, if there is a guy, you know, making tools out of bronze, there was probably 100 generations before him that of little ideas and new designs and discoveries that basically got to that point.
Well, how about, if you go back further, I've read somewhere, and I can't quite source it, where there have been different indigenous peoples from various parts of the planet, obviously never having met or seen the other, but all sort of developing their own set of tools that kind of do the same thing.
Well, yeah, there's like Clovis points. Spear points in one, you know, in the Americas, and then there are similar points in other parts of the world. They're a little bit different, but obviously spear points is spear point.
Right. Yeah, even tools to like shovel and to, you know, do other things other than just kill food. Archaeologists have found such things, and yeah. It's kind of interesting. I guess it's almost, in some cases, there are certain things that might be new, but I guess to Aaron's point, there is a lot of mimicking going on, whether it's we're finding some inspiration in nature or finding some inspiration from some other product or some other thing. I guess, you know, back to, if we go back to our friend Alex from Limanoosh, I mean, think about all the images that you kind of look at to kind of gather ideas and inspiration from. I guess we're all sort of like pulling pulling ideas from other things and other individuals. I guess it's a matter of how do we take those ideas and how do we put them together as the full composition.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm, at least today, where I'm ending up on this, the on this discussion, or the side I'm on, is that we certainly can combine things in new ways, or interpret them in a way that maybe hasn't been done before, but it's still on the foundation of, you know, the society and the history we grew up in.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this then. If you go and look at some of the purists, the purists in design, if you look at, I mean, everybody always talks about Apple. I mean, I work at Dell, but look at the Apple products, and look at how
credit where credit's due.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're kind of significant, and everybody knows what they look like, so it's easy to just reference that. But so looking at their products, and it's, they have basically one gesture that they just continue to evolve and refine and improve on, and really they're not really making a bunch of new goofy shapes for the sake of new goofy shapes. They're sort of evolving the design and continuing to maintain. Now, then other people, we could talk about this too, have said, well, Apple has pulled all their design cues from Dieter Rams, from Braun, right?
Right.
You can make all those visual connections, which I think is kind of cool. I mean, I certainly like Dieter Rams, and I think all of that Braun stuff, even the old antiquated technology that he worked on is just really beautiful and fantastic. Sure. to look at. I mean, I guess there's a lot to be said about that, right? I guess, you know, what those guys really are doing are they're really refining their craft and the process to be more efficient. Right?
Sure. They're simplifying, the sort of distilling something to its, you know, its core components and the simplest form of what it can be.
Yeah.
But doing it in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
So it's a definitely, you know, and if you look at some of those things and you know, some of the information that you had shared with me earlier, if you look at some of the Eames chairs and you map it up with some of the, you know, essential principles of art and design, where there's the golden mean, right? Mm-hmm. That they weren't necessarily designing for the purpose of, okay, this is going to follow the exact proportions. They didn't mentally set that out as a goal, but because of who they were and their skill and talent, it sort of probably naturally fell into those.
Yeah. Thing. Well, there was somebody who, that professor mentioned it in his class from last week. He talked about a particular lady. I don't know if she was a designer or not, and she had dissected a lot of the classics down to its sort of pure geometry in sort of a very graphical way, and it all kind of mapped down to the golden mean, which was really interesting, because I don't think that's what, I guess it's to emphasize your point, which was the talent and the ability that the Eames office had. They were able to kind of build these objects with that sort of golden mean. Mm-hmm. Behind it, although I don't think that's how they started. Like, I've seen some designers start with the sort of this whole premise of, okay, this is the golden mean, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. But
no, I don't think they did. They just had such ingrained talent, and they had developed that they naturally ended up there.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Over the weekend, I saw a long documentary about the pyramids. Mm-hmm. In Egypt, and that's a very common discussion, that some people think it was all planned, and where everything, all the measurements, everything fits like that for a reason, and everything, all the measurements, every calculation, every single dimension, proportion comes around and somehow ties into the golden number, the golden rule.
What do you mean?
The golden
rule, something different.
Yeah, okay.
He who has all the gold makes all the rules, I think.
So some people believe that they just happen to be really good, and you know, that's how it turned out, because good design, even in nature or in the universe, always revolves around the golden mean.
Sure. So
other people think that it was purposeful, and that they knew this mathematically, and that it was precisely calculated.
Maybe they did. Who knows? I guess that goes to the point of, say they did or they didn't, right? If the golden mean was found in nature long before the Egyptians built the pyramids, so did people invent anything? It was just copied from nature, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
So who knows?
Which comes back to what I was saying, that you know, we live in this world, so there's only certain amount. Unless there's, you know, we abide by different physics than what already exists in the universe, then there might not be able to be anything different, just reinterpretations of the same. Because we live in this universe that abides by certain rules. So unless those rules are different, then there's only a certain amount of things that we can come up with.
You just took this conversation to a very different level. Well, that's a good point, though. That's an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really cool. I mean, it's interesting. So, okay, let's go back to something very simple, right? And how about the idea of a clothespin and the invention of a clothespin? Now, is that, I mean, okay, it could be found in nature, could it? I mean, I have one thing in my head. I just want to know what you guys would say about such a device, because it's very clever. They're really sort of, you know, pretty to look at if you think about them right. You know, there's sort of two pieces of wood and a little spring. Yeah. There's something really cool and elegant about such a thing.
I mean, in nature, nothing's ever had to take a shirt and put it on a clothesline to dry, right?
But how do they do it in Disney?
But you could probably find something in nature that does that, you know, in terms of, okay, here's a plant that has a flower that has a mechanism on it that evolution has designed, that when an animal brushes by, it grabs onto its fur, and that's how it spreads.
Well, that's Velcro, so that's what I meant when I said Disney. I mean, if you think about who's the one that always has to stay? Oh, Cinderella, right? If you think about Cinderella, who helped her out? It was the little birds, right? So they had the beaks. I mean, that's the only thing in nature I could think of that was sort of like a clothespin.
Oh, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen that.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that one.
That's okay. But I mean, you know, when I think about something like that, that's not really something that you would necessarily, well, I guess you would see it, right? You see birds flying around all the time, carrying things, holding things with either with their feet or their beaks. I don't know. That was just something that kind of popped in my head. It's something that was kind of a significant invention.
No, the question would be, is the person who invented that, like, I'm sure there's a patent somewhere for, you know, the stereotypical clothespin of two pieces of wood with a metal spring.
It was a Quaker, I think, wasn't it? It's like or a Mennonite, somewhere.
I don't know, but that would be interesting to look that up in the patent archives. But that person obviously was inspired by something.
Yes.
They had a need, right? And then they were inspired to come up with a solution for that need based on, I don't know, maybe crab claws. I don't know.
That would be one, crab claw.
So we can certainly say that there's innovation But I think the hard question is, like, is there anything new? Sort of like if you look at the history of products, they've been evolving with people at the same time for different times, different technologies, and different societal rules. But we're still the same people. We've just been evolving throughout time. So it's kind of the same with products. You know, at the end of the day, it's the same mean, but we've been gradually evolving, you know, all together, including products. Kind of, yeah. You know, it's kind of a weird way to see it, but we're the same people. We make the same mistakes as we have over, you know, over however long we've been.
But, walking around upright?
Yeah. So, but certainly I do think there is innovation. But is there something new that I don't know. I find it hard to believe.
Something new. Yeah. There's innovation. Obviously, there's new technologies and things that come along. And you know, Dan, we were talking earlier about, you know, your electric car. If you think about 120 years ago, they were barely, you know, 6 horsepower or 8 was an 8 horsepower. Ford's first car was like, I think eight horsepower and, you know, with top speed of like 20 or 25. Sure. And now, you know, with new technology, you've got a car that can basically drive itself. But I think from an aesthetic or an artistic point of view, is there anything new that's being done? I don't know. I don't know if there's anything new, but I think it's kind of like what we talked about before. It's that whole idea of bringing together different things that we know about in a completely new and unique way.
Well, and that's, I think, what I agree with, is we can combine. In reality, there's nothing new and there's nothing that ever changes. The only thing that changes is you can count on it. I'm sure there's a saying that goes with this, is things will change, but nothing else. You can't bet on anything else.
Right.
But going back to this guy at the patent office, this Charles Duell, so that quote that he's attributed with of everything already being invented actually was proven that he didn't say that. But what he did say, which I kind of find actually somewhat hopeful, he said, and this was actually in 1902, he said, "In my opinion, all previous advances in the various lines of invention will appear totally insignificant when compared with those which the present century will witness. I almost wish that I might live my life over again to see the wonders which are at the threshold." And so he said that in 1902.
Yeah, cool.
So if you can sort of look at that, you know, with 100 and almost 20 years of hindsight from where we're at now, you can see, wow, he was spot on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I heard that quote before too. And is it just something that somebody made up and it's lore? It's just a...
Well, yeah, so...
Urban myth?
Yeah, so it's something that... actually, I was looking into this. They don't know where the origin came from. It's just it can't be proven that he ever said it. And so if that's the case, he probably didn't say it. A report that they think a possible origin could be a statement found in a congressional report in the mid-1800s, 1843, by a guy named Henry Ellsworth, where he kind of said something to that end. But anyways, this guy unfortunately has been attributed with saying that, so I guess he's not around to defend himself.
Maybe it's because he was so insightful, they wanted to just like sully his reputation.
Could be.
Like, this guy, you know, Jimmy was always getting ahead. Now that he's dead.
Yeah, that's right.
We're just gonna where he can't defend himself, and there's no snoops or whatever to back us up there, yeah, or to refute our claim.
But if you think, though, okay, so he said that last quote in 1902, and we know, obviously, and can see everything that's been invented, or that, you know, so-called been invented between now and then, which is a lot, And if we think of, you know, the speed at which things are continuing to change, I think if we were to say, okay, from now in the century ahead of us, it's probably going to be even more so.
Yeah.
So I don't look at, okay, the question of has everything already been designed or invented in a negative way. I look forward with, you know, that, wow, look what's ahead of us. We can't even imagine it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, I guess, you know, what's the point, right? What's the point of this discussion? I would go back and kind of think about, I mean, really, I guess it kind of goes, you know, we've got our friend Alex at Liminouche, and like, he's a great source of inspiration, right? Of looking at things and seeing how textures are done and the way it's kind of organized is really, it's really cool, because as designers, we're interested in either textures or color accents or materials, of whether it's aluminum or carbon fiber, which I think is really cool. And so knowing that we're not really doing things new. We might do things differently that might appear new, but we're right. Really seeking and reaching for
something beyond. And I think that in general, I think it's a hopeful message, right? So all of us are trying to come up with new ways and innovative ways and helpful ways of doing things, right? But and collectively, we're slowly taking that ball and moving it down the field, you know,
yeah.
As small as our contributions might be. But we're still a part of that team moving the ball.
Yeah.
In this discussion, I'm thinking of design as something organic that has been evolving throughout time with us. And it's going to keep changing and evolving with time, and things like certain, I mean, if you believe in evolution or survival of the fittest, some things die and some things, you know, breed with one another and come up with something different. You know, there are products in a way, I mean, and I'm saying a way because we're designing them, but they're adapting to changing circumstances. So they will continue to evolve and adapt and change. So I am hopeful in that way. What makes me think that might change a bit is with the introduction of AI. So AI is going to basically cut that time, because right now we're basically calculating, you know, all the different possibilities of design, and it's taking these many years to get to this point. But AI or supercomputers are going to be able to take that time span and shrink it,
right.
Calculate right. Everything.
That's probably an entire podcast in and of itself.
Yeah, we should talk about that. I think maybe trying to find somebody that's more of an expert. Yeah.
Actually, yeah, we'll do that. I'll take that task on. I'll see if I can find somebody, because that would be fascinating to hear some of the latest thinking and what's going on there.
You know, you guys are hopeful. So am I. I think, you know, for anybody out there, I would hope that they would see, I guess if you want to challenge our intuition, feel free to reach out to us and let us know. I don't think there's anything we're not certainly speaking the Holy Grail about anything. I would love to hear another designer's opinion about new things. I mean, there's certainly new technology, but new forms or new compositions that don't seem like they've been borrowed. I guess we can find everything borrowed from just about everything. I'm just trying to relate this back to if we were trying to boil it down to some kind of quick advice to new designers or students that would be curious about their endeavors or their path. What would you say?
Well, I would say, don't necessarily be discouraged. I would, you know, looking sort of at my development in my career. I can see, okay, you know, in terms of my contribution of, let's say, taking his ball and moving it down the field. Certainly, in my earlier years, I probably, you know, spent those searching for what the right answer is for a certain product, right? I would say that's not a bad thing. Everybody has to go through that. So my advice would be, don't be discouraged. You're going to go through a learning curve. At the end of the day, that curve is still contributing.
Right.
And when you get later in your career, you're going to be more effective and more efficient, and you'll do things better, and you can contribute even to a greater level. So that would be my advice, is keep at it. Don't be too discouraged, but also be humble.
Yeah. Yeah. I would add that it really kind of goes back to everything that we've talked about, which is we're all sort of borrowing and looking at other things to kind of help give us inspiration. And what I would say is that's really a collective thing. It's a team-oriented thing, because as you share sketches and ideas and share forms and design solutions with your peers, it sparks something in the other person, and then they develop it, and that sparks you, and you develop it. And so after a 6 month or 1 year or 2 year process of designing something, you really have something really, really nice at the end of the
day. Right. And that's, again, going back to some of the previous topics, that's how humans came up with bronze tools, right?
Right.
That's the exact same process. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, very good. Well, it was a great, great chat.
Yeah, good conversation. Can't wait to talk to you guys some more. And at some point, we'll be face to face. Don't know when I'm going to come back to Austin. It's a little
bit too. How long is the work from home in place?